Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode until the question-and-answer period of today's conference call. During the question-and-answer period, please press star one on the touch of your phone. You'll be asked to record your name prior to asking your question. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference call over to Ms. Jenny Lyons. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thanks, Dennis, and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jenny Lyons, and I'm with Public Affairs here at NOAA Fisheries. Today, NOAA is announcing our 2015 Status of U.S. Fisheries Report. The report shows that domestic fish stocks continue to do well, keeping right in line with our sustainability and resiliency goals. And the news comes right along with our 40th anniversary of the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act. The folks on this phone are probably familiar with that, but Magnuson-Stevens is the primary law that governs U.S. fisheries, and therefore quite a cause for celebration here at NOAA this month. So with that, I have the pleasure of introducing to you all right now Alan Reisenhuber. Alan is the director of NOAA Fisheries Office of Sustainable Fisheries. Alan is going to provide a brief summary of our news, and then we will open for questions. We also have Karen Abrams with us today, and she may chime in to answer questions as well. Karen is NOAA Fisheries Branch Chief for Ecosystems and Domestic Fisheries. If you got our media advisory, you have the correct spelling of their names and titles. If not, you can find that media advisory on NOAA.gov or give me a ring right after this call at 301-427-8013. Just a reminder, though, this call is for working media only. If you are not a member of the press, you are welcome to listen, but please do not ask questions. This time really is reserved for reporters. Dennis, can you please explain again the process for asking a question?
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on the touch of your phone. You'll be asked to record your name prior to asking a question.
Thank you, Dennis. Now let's hear from Alan. Alan, please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. And as Jenny mentioned, and many of you know, that April marks the 40th anniversary of passage of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. So it's fitting that we take some time today to report on the success of that act. As Jenny mentioned, NOAA is issuing its annual report on the status of our fisheries for calendar year 2015, a key yardstick for measuring our success. We track more than 470 stocks or stock complexes, and this annual report gives a snapshot of their status by listing which ones are on the overfishing and overfished list. In sum, U.S. fisheries continued to rebuild during 2015, with an additional two stocks being listed as rebuilt. The number of stocks on the overfishing and overfished lists remains at near all-time lows, with only 9% subject to overfishing and just 16% overfished. This continued success highlights the federal, state, stakeholder, and public partnership guiding the management of these valuable resources and the sacrifices our fishermen have made to ensure that the nation's marine fisheries are sustainable now and in the future. Led by the 8 regional fishery management councils, the Magnuson-Stevens Act process has become a dynamic, science-based management process over its 40-year history. And most importantly, it's proving to be successful at ending overfishing, rebuilding stocks, and providing significant benefits to the U.S. economy. So let's turn a little bit to the specifics, and I'll walk through those, and as Jenny mentioned, we'll have time for questions at the end. So the first measure we have is which stocks are subject to overfishing, and let's start with a brief explanation of overfishing. Overfishing occurs when a harvest rate for the stock is too high. In other words, too many fish are being caught in a year. So as outlined in more detail on page 2 of the report, 91% or 285 stocks for which we have good information were not subject to overfishing. And that leaves only 9 stocks, 9% or 28 stocks that are listed as subject to overfishing. You'll note that this is an increase of 2 stocks compared with our 2014 report, which showed 26 stocks, or about 8%, were listed as subject to overfishing. Also on that second page, it shows the specific stocks that came on and off the overfishing list. So during 2015, 8 stocks were removed from the overfishing list, and 10 stocks were added based on new assessments. And that's how we result with the increase of 2. The second important measure we include in the report is the number of stocks that are overfished. An overfished stock is one that has a population size that is too low. Low populations can be caused by overfishing, but also by other factors such as degraded habitat, pollution, or changes in climate. As outlined in the report, of the stock or stock complexes with a known status, 84% or 195 stocks are not overfished. 38 stocks, the remaining 16%, are listed as overfished. This is an increase of one stock over the 37 stocks listed in the 2014 report, which was also 16%. So two stocks were removed from the overfished list in 2015, and three stocks were added, and those specific stocks are listed in the report. The final measure is the number of stocks that are rebuilt. So when an overfished stock is considered rebuilt, it's at a level where its population has grown to a target size that supports its maximum sustained yield. So in 2015, two stocks were designated as rebuilt, bringing the total number of stocks rebuilt since 2000 to 39. And again, those two stocks, Canary Rockfish and Petrolli Sol, are listed in the report. As I mentioned in the beginning, this report is just a snapshot of the stock status. It's important to remember that all federal fisheries, including stocks currently on the overfishing and overfished lists, are operating under annual catch limits set to end and prevent overfishing. So when the status of a stock changes, the Magnuson-Stevens Act process is adaptive to new information to ensure that overfishing doesn't persist and rebuilding plans are put in place. The councils and NOAA are already taking action to address those stocks that were added to both the overfishing and overfished list. For example, the 2016 quota for summer flounder was reduced by nearly 30%, and the proposed quota for yellowtail flounder and winter flounder are proposed at over 60% lower. Additionally, many fish stocks are international in nature and have varying amounts of participation by U.S. fishermen. Therefore, it's critical that we work with our international partners in ending overfishing. For example, U.S. fishermen harvest less than 1% of the quotas for two of the stocks listed as subject to overfishing, and that's the Eastern Pacific swordfish and the Atlantic big eye tuna. Before closing, I'd like to touch on a couple additional topics. First is the important role fisheries play in our nation's economy. In recent years, commercial fishermen have landed over 9 billion pounds of fish with an estimated value of over $5 billion and supported an industry of over 800,000 jobs. Equally, the recreational community has over 10 million recreational anglers that took around 70 million fishing trips. Second, NOAA and the Regional Fishery Management Councils continue to adapt our fisheries management to reflect changing ocean conditions and to look for ways to address the role of ecosystems and climate impacts. To tackle these topics, we've done a number of things. We've proposed revisions to the Magnuson-Stevens Act's national standards to assist in developing rebuilding plans, setting annual catch limits, and developing effective fishery management plans. We've released a draft ecosystem-based fishery management policy to clarify the agency's direction, focus, and priorities for managing fisheries in an increasingly complex environment. We've released a draft national bycatch reduction strategy in recognition of the important role that bycatch plays in maintaining our nation's fisheries and conserving protected resources. A fisheries climate science strategy was released in 2015 and was aimed at improving the production and use of climate-related information. We continue to work with a number of other federal agencies to combat illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing and see-through fraud through the President's Task Force. You can visit our website for more information on these activities, the status of the stocks report, or information on individual stocks and species on our FishWatch site. In closing, the partnership forged over 40 years under the Magnuson-Stevens Act has resulted in the status of stocks remaining near all-time lows, and additional stocks are rebuilding. Through the Regional Fishery Management Council process and its open, stakeholder-driven process, the U.S. will continue to be a global leader in managing its fisheries sustainably. So thanks for taking the time to listen, and I will be happy to answer any questions I can.
Thank you, Alan. And as he just said, at this time we're going to open up for reporter questions. So, Dennis, can you just explain one more time how the reporters can ask a question?
Thank you. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on the touch of your phone. You'll be asked to record your name prior to asking your question. Again, that's star 1 on the touch of your phone. One moment, please.
It looks like our first question is going to come from Ledge King at USA Today. Hey, Ledge, how are you doing? We're getting ready to open your line right now. There
okay.
You go. You're open.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, thanks for having the call. Alan, so I know that since 06 when the catch limits, or 07 when the catch limits were put in place, there's been a general trend downward of overfished and overfished, and stocks that have been overfished and stocks that are being, I'm going to get this wrong, but, you know, the overfishing and overfished list. In 2015, both those numbers ticked up slightly from 37 to 38 on the overfished list and from 26 to 28 on the overfishing list. Is there a concern that that this is more than just a blip, that something's happening that may indicate that this is going to be treading water in terms of the numbers? Or can you talk a little bit about maybe why it went up even slightly this year?
Okay, thanks for that question. Yeah, it does tick up slightly for this year. But I think what that highlights and what we're doing in response to it really highlights the Magnuson-Act process of when you get new information, the process reacts. So we have annual catch limits for every stock that are aimed at preventing overfishing. But we do stock assessments on stock, differing stocks each year, and those stock assessments may show good news or they may show that we need to do something to better manage that stock. So what you're seeing this year in 15 was 8 stocks were removed from the overfishing list. That's really good news. So if you look at those 8 stocks, those are no longer subject to overfishing. But we did have 10 come on, which was a little higher number than we usually have come on the list each year. And I think what that shows is as we're getting new information, better information on the status of these fisheries, we're then able to better manage them. So those were all done by new stock assessments. Hogfish, for example, before was unknown. So we assessed it and found out that it needed some additional management. So I think what you're going to see over time is there's going to be a certain number of stocks subject to overfishing or overfished as we go along. The important thing is we have a process in place that recognizes there's an issue and acts immediately to take care of it. And that's where I mentioned a couple things that we've already taken in response to the results of this report to manage those stocks. The other thing is we have new assessments occurring all the time where stocks may come up for their assessment and they're found to be in the same healthy condition, where they may have been unknown previously and they're in a healthy condition. And there were about 4 of those this year that you don't see referenced in the report, simply because everything's fine with that stock. So I hope that answers the question.
Thank you, Alan. It looks like our next question is from Patrick Whittle at the Associated Press. Go ahead, Patrick. You're open.
Hi. Thank you very much. I did notice that there are some species of high economic value being added to the overfished list. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the specific challenges that are faced by Chinook salmon and the species of flounder that are listed that are being added to the overfishing list. Thanks.
Okay. Real quick on the Chinook salmon, as you know, those are West Coast species. Some of the climate conditions out there, drought and other things, are having an effect on those stocks. Those 4 salmon stocks, the 3 Chinook and the 2 Coho, kind of there's a good news, bad news part to them where they exceeded their harvest levels, and that's why they were listed as subject to overfishing, but they met their escapement or spawning levels. So while more fish were caught than we wanted, more fish than we think are needed to spawn did make it back up the rivers. So especially with salmon, you have not only ocean conditions you need to take into account, but also in-river conditions. And the Pacific Council and our folks on the West Coast are working hard right now to set salmon seasons for next year. So hopefully measures will be in place to help those stock. On the flounder, those are northeast stocks. And you notice that they were added both to the overfishing and the overfished list. So those are some we're going to take a very close look at and see what we need to do. As I mentioned, there's a proposal out right now to significantly cut the harvest level or quota for those stocks to address that and begin working on rebuilding programs. So again, yes, it's we wouldn't like to see these stocks added to the overfished or overfishing list, but we have a process in place to address those very quickly, and hopefully we can get them off the list.
Thank you, Alan. A reminder just to press star one if you'd like to ask a question. There's several of you on the call, and I don't think any of you are shy because I've talked to all of you before. So please press star one to ask a question. We don't have anyone in the queue right now, so you'd get first dibs. Go ahead, Claire with NPR.
Hi, I was wondering, how do you choose new stocks to assess, and how many new stocks were looked at in 2015 for this report?
So in 2015, we look at all the stocks we have information on, and that differs. And I believe the report has those exact numbers in them. But overall, we look at about 470 stocks. And of those 470, we have information to make a determination on just part of them. So we're always trying to get more information to assess the status of different stocks. So that's kind of what we look at. Now, how we decide what stock assessments to do each year is a process that's conducted regionally with the councils and our folks around the country on which stocks need assessed. How long has it been since they've been assessed? What's their importance? Do we have information that might indicate that there's a problem? And we actually have a stock assessment improvement plan and a stock assessment prioritization plan that looks at a number of factors on which stocks go next. So we don't have the budget to do all the stocks every year, and it probably doesn't make sense to do that. But we have a good, robust process in determining what stocks get assessed this year, and then also future years. We plan out about 3 years on what our assessments will be.
Thank you. Emily Yelly with Greenwire. You are up for the next question. We're opening your phone right now. Go ahead.
Hey, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what we don't know about data poor stocks and just the fish that aren't showing up in this report.
Yeah, that's a good question, and it goes a little bit to my previous response that we don't know everything we would like to know about every stock. So each year we try to assess some new stocks that haven't been assessed before or look at stocks that we think need to be assessed. So hogfish is a little bit of an example of that, where it was a single stock or viewed as a single stock before. We did a stock assessment, and the scientists found that it actually are three separate stocks. So they split it in three separate stocks, two of which were okay, and one warranted listing as being overfished. So we're continuing to try to increase the number of stocks that we assess a year, and we've been working with Congress to improve our appropriations to get additional funding to do that. So it's really a balance between getting information as quickly as we can on some of the stocks that are subject to overfishing or support the industry, and then also trying to move ahead on assessing what we call stocks with an unknown status.
Our next question comes from Cliff White with Seafood Source.
Alan?
Yep, you're on.
Great,
go ahead.
Great. Question is, can you tell me some or give a couple examples of some success stories you've had this year? Love to write about some good news you've had in the industry.
Well, some good news is those two stocks that we've listed as rebuilt, Canary Rockfish and Petrolli Sole, are part of the the groundfish fishery on the West Coast, and they had really been stocks that had limited the fishery to only being able to catch so many of other fish because they would reach their quotas on these two stocks. So now that these two are rebuilt, the fishermen can, A, catch a little bit more of them, but also it may help them catch some other fish as well. So that's a real success story. I think around the country, we can continue to hear success stories in individual fisheries where we've been able to raise some quotas and keep folks fishing.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the Newark Star-Ledger. Al, go ahead. Your line's open.
Yep. This is Al Rastori here. I have a bunch of questions, but I'll get to the most important one. Atlantic mackerel. That fishery came back after we got rid of the foreign fleets, they started getting the regular run that's been there ever since I've been fishing from the south up along the Atlantic mid-Atlantic coast in the spring, and that is virtually completely disappeared for many years now. When I called NIMS about that last year, try to find out what's been done, and they looked into it. The guy I was talking to, that he looked into it, and they said, "Oh, it seems like the assessments showing that the stock is in good shape was done quite a few years ago," and then he conceded that, "Yeah, we're not seeing many macro landings at all, even from the big pad trawlers," and he was going to look into it, but we're still in the same position, not having that migratory run. Has anything been done about it?
Well, Al, I don't know specifically, so we may need to get back with you and get you in touch with our experts in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. I know along the Mid and the Northeast coast, some of the distribution of the stocks has been changing for environmental and perhaps climate reasons. So I think folks are continually looking at, where are the fish stocks, as well as how much of those fish stocks can be harvested. But I'm unfortunately not an Atlantic mackerel expert, but we'll try and find somebody to help you with that question specifically.
Yeah, Al, if you want to give me a call or shoot me an email after this, I can get you in touch with the right people. My direct number is 301-427-8013. Our next question comes from Sandy Mazza at LA News Group. Go ahead, Sandy.
Hi. I noticed on the West Coast that you have overfished salmon, which we know very well, tuna, obviously. But who's eating striped marlin? Why are they overfished?
Well, striped marlin are something that are caught more off of the Western Pacific than they are off of California. So that one we've listed as a Western Pacific one, and it's perhaps one that has some harvest from international fisheries out there. And again, the U.S. fisheries out there are just a small part of those overall ones.
Our next question, we have a follow-up from Patrick Whittle at the Associated Press. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yes, hi. Thanks again. One of the stocks being removed from the overfishing list is the Thorny Skate, which is up for potential listing under the Endangered Species Act. And I'm wondering if the removal from the overfishing list could potentially impact that listing in any way. And also, I would like to know where we could get comprehensive lists of all species that are currently on both lists.
All right, great question, Patrick. Yeah, so the stock assessment for the Thorny Skate showed that it should be removed from the overfishing list, and that'll be taken into account as part of their ESA review. So they will look at that as well on what the overall status of that stock is. So it's not one or the other. They look at those together. And then about your question about where you can see the complete list, that would be our website. The NOAA Fisheries website has these reports going back to about 2000, so you can look at the history of where we've come from, but it also lists in detail detail all the stocks that are on the list, either the overfishing list or the overfished list. And if you have trouble finding that, I believe our website's on the back of the status of the stocks report, but I think most folks are familiar with the website.
Or you can email me, Patrick. I know you have my email, but Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E dot Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at noaa.gov. Ledge King with USA Today has our next question. Go ahead, Ledge.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, Alan. Obviously, this report focuses on stocks that have been added, stocks that have been removed. But to follow up actually just what you were talking about, there are obviously stocks that have been on there for a while, Red Snapper in the Gulf, Cod in New England. Do you get any sense, I mean, can you talk at least about, if not in a specific sense, a general sense that what's the hope that these stocks are going to eventually come off, or is the trend moving in the right direction on that? Can you speak a little bit about the stocks that aren't coming on or coming off but have been there for a while?
Certainly. And so that kind of goes to the definition of overfishing, which is a rate of harvest within a year, and that's what these ACLs are trying to control. So some of the stocks in New England, our assessments keep showing that we need to catch fewer of those fish. And in some cases, the fishermen haven't been catching the full quota. So we're trying to set ACLs, these annual catch limits, so that overfishing doesn't occur, and that's based on the latest information. So as that information changes or evolves over the time, they may stay on that list. And I think that the yellowtail and the winter flounder may be in that instance where the fishermen haven't been catching the full quota, and so we've been looking at that through our science programs to find out what do we need to make sure we do with the annual catch limit. The other side of that is the overfished side, and that's the population is too low. And often we need to give we always need to give those stocks time to rebuild. So some stocks like Red Snapper are very slow growing. They don't mature until they're teens or 20s, so it takes those stocks longer to reach their maximum sustainable yield. So Red Snapper, for example, as a long rebuilding plan, probably in the order of 20 to 30 years. So we project that growth out, but we try to allow enough fishing to allow, harvests every year by fishermen as that stock rebuilds. So it's a mixture of what can we do in the short term, which is control the annual harvest, and what do we do in the long term to rebuild that stock, but also help maintain the fisheries associated with them.
So we have no questions in the queue right now. Press *1 if you'd like to ask a question, whether you have not yet asked a question or you want to ask another question. This is your chance to do so. You have the experts on the phone here. *1 to ask a question. And we'll go back to Al with the Newark Star Ledger. Go ahead, Al.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. When I was a member of the First Mid-Atlantic Council, I tried to push the idea of starting a computer assessment of the stocks so that we could manage them on a more logical basis rather than stock by stock, just as they have to do in the Great Lakes, that are just assuming that every species has all they want to eat and no predation on them. So. I believe there was a little bit of progress eventually in doing that, but I haven't heard much about it lately. Has there been any significant progress in getting able to really control the fishery in a proper way, as for instance is doing the Great Lakes with predator and prey considerations?
Yeah, that's a great question, Al, and I think one of the things you'll want to take a look at, and hopefully the other folks will as well, is some of the ecosystem-based fisheries management things that are going on. So as I mentioned, we have a draft policy out that we're going to try and finalize and actually have a roadmap on how do we get to some of this ecosystem-based, which does the sort of things you're talking about, predator-prey interactions and relationship between the fisheries, to make sure we're using all the resources out there in the best possible manner. So So that's the ecosystem side of it. And councils around the country have been doing that to differing degrees. The Mid-Atlantic Council, where you are, is currently looking at a 4-H fish or an unmanaged fish amendment to its management plans on do we need to limit the harvest on some of these fish that aren't really the directed fisheries, but may provide some of the important food for some other stocks. So I think, yes, there's a lot going on that. We're trying to figure out ways to enhance and complement what the councils are doing. And I think a good place to see some of the thoughts on that is this ecosystem-based strategy we've put out. Thanks.
Thanks, Al. And, again, this is your chance to ask questions. So if anybody would like to line up to ask questions, star one is how you do it. So please feel free to – we'll give you another chance here to ask questions. And, well, it looks like the questions are starting to wrap up. I guess we have one more from Al from the Newark Star-Ledger.
Yeah, the another thing that I try to get going a long time ago when I was on the Mid-Atlantic Council you mentioned earlier have some hope for is taking account of different stocks of species rather than just the species overall, because silver hake, which we call whiting in the metropolitan New York, New Jersey area, was an extremely important species recreationally and commercially, and it's virtually disappeared from our waters to where someone catching one in a party boat now. They don't even know what it is, and that's been controlled by the New England Council, and whiting are more abundant up there. And that's been the management. I was never able to get anyone to consider the separate stock status of the mud hole off New York, New Jersey as a separate issue.
Al, thank you so much for your thoughts. Is there a question here for our experts?
Hello.
Yes. Is there a question here?
Yeah, I want to know if there's anything being done on the silver hake and separate stock issue in New York, New Jersey.
Well, Al, I hate to say this, but I'm even less of an expert on silver hake than Atlantic mackerel. So I think we can work with you to try and get some answers to that. But I think you're pointing out some of the issues that the councils are dealing with around the country. As the environment changes or the climate changes, people are facing the fish stocks aren't where they used to be, and maybe their distribution is changing. Maybe their populations are changing, and that's really what we're trying to get at and look at under the climate strategy is what's going on out there and how do we get better information. And an important part of that is getting information from fishermen like you and your colleagues on what they're seeing on the water, since we're not out there everywhere. So I appreciate your comment, and we'll work with some folks to get you some better answers than I can provide today.
Feel free, Al, to contact me after this call with some specific questions I can look into for you. Cliff White with Seafood Source. Go ahead.
Hi again. You haven't talked much about climate change. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, especially I live in Portland, Maine, and we're seeing its effects in the Gulf of Maine in terms of warming temperatures.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think climate change or changing environments and that resulted changing distributions of the fish stock are something all the councils are wrestling with. And they're looking at, how do we look at that from an ecosystem perspective? And we in the agency are trying to look at it as how do we get better information? How do we measure changes in climate that are important to fish stock and then let the fishery managers know what those are so we can be a little bit more predictive? And, for example, if the environment has changed in one area, and we need to lower a quota, perhaps we can start doing that so it's not as a significant reduction later on. Or perhaps the fish stocks in an area are increasing because of the climate change. So those are definitely things we're looking at, and I'd invite you to look at that climate science strategy that's discussed on the last page of the status of stocks report. There's a lot of good information on what we and the councils are doing to address the very kind of impact that you're seeing in New England.
Thank you, Cliff. And while we have no other questions, I'd like to give Karen a chance to chime in if there's anything else she'd like to add to what's been said.
Thanks, Jenny. So I don't really have much more to add other than this represents great progress over the last 40 years of implementing the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and we're really pleased to be able to get this report out and happy that you have asked so many probing questions getting at some of these really central questions related to fisheries management.
Great. So thank you both, Alan and Karen, and Dennis as well, and thank you everyone for joining our call. If you have any other questions or think of something after this or want a recording of the call for your own note-taking purposes, feel free to contact me directly right after. Again, my name is Jenny Lyons, and my direct phone number is 301-427-8013. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. At this time, that does today's conference call. All parties may disconnect.